Hey, it's Kelly. And at the end of every week, I like to share something true and useful, something I stumbled over that gave me a burst of optimism, something you can share with friends like an audio greeting card, something to help us all keep our eyes on what's working and what could be. So I'll be right back with this week's For the Good of the Order. This is Kelly Corrigan Wonders. Hi, guys. So this week's For the Good of the Order is some closing thoughts on forgiveness. Anna Quinlan and I talked about it. I wrote a short piece for that episode that ran maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago. And then I continued to work on that piece for the New York Times. And in the process of that, I talked to 3 or 4 forgiveness experts of different types, a rabbi, Rabbi Michael Lizak, who I've also interviewed on the pod, a guy at University of Wisconsin named Robert Enright, who started a forgiveness institute, and several other folks, including Anne Lamott, who is just a go-to on all things, another former podcast guest. And I put together this longer piece, and it was too long for the New York Times. They did post and print a version of this essay that was tightened up, shall we say. But I felt that the things that were left on the cutting room floor might actually be of some value. And the other thing that happened was that many people, after listening to the Anna Quinlan conversation about forgiveness, asked me if I could create a separate file of just my thoughts on forgiveness that they might be able to share with people who have forgiven them over the years as a sort of thank you for that act of grace. And that was pretty inspiring to me to think that maybe you would share this with somebody to say, thank you for forgiving me. So here are my full and final thoughts on forgiveness. Use and share as you like. Here's a short list of things to keep handy during the holidays. Throat lozenges, scotch tape, a dust buster, extra blankets, and forgiveness. Every functional family, defined here as people willing to be in unchosen relationships without end, relies on forgiveness, and in perfect conditions, that forgiveness is routine, spontaneous, and possibly beyond merit. Religions and wisdoms across time vow there is a way to make space at our table for an offending family member without throwing open the doors to more of the same behavior. I believe that means that even in the most trying cases, the goal is compassion for all actors without clemency for all acts. On those occasions when casual absolution sounds like too tough a task, it helps me to remember that we practice all the time. We forgive our parents for not understanding when we're joking, for worrying about the wrong things, for looking at us that way they do, for repeating themselves, needing so much help setting up the DVR, for blaring cable news, for asking about Toctic and rolling their eyes when we mention healthcare or CO2 emissions, for bringing mortality into every room. We forgive our siblings for staining the sweater, losing the sleeping bag, stealing the girl, for marrying better, for earning more, for being chosen, for not seeing us as the adults we've become, for holding us hostage over that one time we said that one thing, for being smarter or more athletic or happier than we are, for having children who are smarter or more athletic or happier than ours. We forgive our spouses for losing their phones, for using our toothbrush, for liking people we don't, for coming home late, for drinking too much at that barbecue or being overly solicitous to the pretty but mean neighbor lady, for going on and never asking about our big meeting, for witnessing our every trifling and gross failure, for being better than we are at cooking, spreadsheets, and password management in front of our kids, for being only part of what we need. We forgive our children for getting out of the car without taking in any of the bags, for not trying hard enough to know what we're trying to say when we're frazzled, for leaving towels on the floor at Nana's house, for scaring us with their age-appropriate but still shuddersome risk-taking, for only calling when they're in a bad mood or need money, for growing up and pulling away. We forgive ourselves for being tired, hangry, absent, or critical, for overeating or skipping the touch football game, for bagging out on our high school friends, for caring about what people think and commenting on our kids' appearance too much, for mouthing off about corrupt politicians and then doing barely anything to make change, for abandoning the parental pledge of transcendence and going hardcore human on our children. Deficiencies, ours, theirs, ever more varieties and degrees as each new day passes, demanding to be acknowledged, to be pardoned. It's not easy. My rabbi friend, Michael Lezak, watched his father die without making up with his estranged brother. He's officiated hundreds of funerals where people have not resolved their relationships, compounding their suffering with regrets and shame. Pain and anger, he said, embed themselves in our souls. Gone unprocessed, unchecked, and ultimately unreleased, this subterranean hurt can so easily metastasize, sapping us of potential and impeding us from feeling fully alive. That's what he told me. Anne Lamott told me, not forgiving is like drinking rat poison and expecting the rat to die. The Buddhists are quick to point out the wrongheadedness of karmic sparring. Because they believe that we are always preparing to die and be reborn, we're wise to expunge the vengeful feelings ASAP, lest they become embedded in our next life as ground floor problems. Rebirth doesn't resonate with me, but protecting my foundation's concrete from setting around a bunch of psychological detritus? Sign me up. The why of forgiveness is more obvious than the how. Oscar Wilde wrote, "After a good dinner, one can forgive anybody, even one's own relations." I'm pretty sure it takes more than a well-cooked bird to break through the thick-set wall of emotions, disgust, superiority, condescension, that block us from forgiveness when the offense is especially cruel or damaging. Where to begin? The church I went to as a child didn't offer much in the way of instructions, but it did hand out forgiveness on the regular to anyone who asked for it on their knees in a wooden booth. For me, this was a junk-in, junk-out experience as I confessed mostly half-truths about using the Lord's name in vain and taking a dollar from my dad's billfold. I never tested the system with anything more problematic. My only serious successes, meaning extensions of forgiveness for matters beyond the usual familial push and pull, involve invoking memories of my own crimes and misdemeanors. I have been late, lucky, lazy. I have been the young solipsist, the cocky college kid, the judgy midlife Karen. I have drunk too much drink, spoken too sharply, been harsh and unbending in my evaluations. Sometimes I don't help out as much as I should. I'm only partially informed and overly influenced by the outlets I choose to explain the world to me. Sometimes I can bring this reflective process on myself. Other times it takes a reminder from my husband after I've ranted about some transgression against me. Once my recall has been revived, I try to stay in the memory as long as I can bear. The more detail I can conjure, the more completely my sense of outrage dissipates. The Catholics of my childhood might call this process confession adjacent. I think of it as humility, and there's research showing a link between facing our own flaws and finding our way to forgive others. Robert Enreich, a founding member of the International Forgiveness Institute, suggests shifting focus from ourselves to the offending other. He defines forgiveness as simply choosing to be good to those who are not good to us. He does not recommend adjudicating the hurt. Better to skip the picking over, the enumerating, the case-making. Direct all energy to this transformative move, recognizing the inherent worth in the other. In his process model of forgiveness, he documents the relationship between empathic humility and forgiveness. Because as people forgive others, he says, They often ask themselves, have I hurt others and are they feeling pain? Rabbi Lizak uses and recommends a daily prayer called the Bedtime Shema to consider our lives at a macro level and what we might leave behind if tonight were our last night alive. Let my sleep be undisturbed by troubling thoughts, bad dreams, and wicked schemes, the prayer goes. In other words, may I not spend my nights prosecuting wrongdoers in front of an imaginary jury seeking the condemnation of whatever defendants I have on trial. On Yom Kippur, the annual Day of Atonement, Lizak points out that Jews read a passage that includes a clear call to choose life. Part of this choosing life business, he says, entails building the muscle tone to relinquish grudges. He believes that the forgiveness muscle builds as all muscles do, through repetitive use. We start small, say with used toothbrushes, and we work our way up from there. Lizak also suggests we pursue this emotional habit in community with others, like workout buddies who hold us responsible. So if you're looking for a 2021 holiday miracle, here it is. Sometimes we look past. We let go. We engage in a kind of circular amnesty that marries an acceptance of our own flawed ordinariness and the truth that every last one of us is more than our most unjust behaviors. And we break bread with a clean heart. Those are my thoughts. I hope that they help you have an awesome holiday season. We'll be back next week with the beginning of our Best Of series. And I also encourage you to go to pbs.org and do a little binge watching. All 10 episodes of Tell Me More with Kelly Corrigan are posted now. And I think in total, they go a long way towards lifting our spirits and reviving the sense of optimism that we so desperately need to make change.